Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 382 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyron, your host, as usual. And today we're reaching back into the archives once again to listen to a podcast that originally aired back on September 10th, 2018, as episode 128. So quite a while ago. And the reason we're doing this, I actually saw a post from this young lady in my Facebook feed this morning. And for whatever reason, it kind of resonated with me. And I said, you know, I haven't spoken to her in quite some time. And I think where we are today in society, it's always good to remind ourselves to work on our inner game. And so that's what Lex Lee Overton focuses on. She is a former trial attorney in the Baton Rouge area, who now and has for quite some time devoted herself to helping attorneys focus on their inner game through mindfulness and meditation. And she runs a daily event on Facebook and YouTube and has quite a following. And so I thought, given where we are today, everybody could use a little bit of relaxation and inner focus, and I thought, let's get Lex Lee back on the podcast through the magic of re-listening to her previous episode, as I said, episode 128. So without further delay, here once again is Lex Lee Overton.
Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Lex Lee Overton, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
I'm so thrilled that you could be with me today. Do you go by Lex or Lex Lee or Lexi or?
It's Lex Lee.
Lex Lee.
Yes.
How did that come about? That's an interesting name.
It's an unusual name for sure. Lex is Latin for law and Lee is my father's name. And my parents had me when they were in law school and I was their first girl and they had three boys before me. So they decided to be creative and put a little pressure on me at the same time.
Wow. You're lucky that they didn't name you Learned.
Yeah. <that's
right. laughs> Something so truly. So it's a lovely name. Lex Lee, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. I have been a trial lawyer in Baton Rouge for almost 25 years. And over the last several years, I have been transitioning out of the practice of law and into doing coaching and consulting work specifically for lawyers. So my passion now truly and my mission is to help lawyers to be more empowered in the practice of law, helping them to find what I call inner peace, to be more confident and secure and just happier in their practices and what they're doing in their lives.
Now, that's interesting because when most people say I'm developing a coaching practice to help attorneys get more out of their practice and be happier, they're usually talking specifically about how they manage their practice, how they manage their firm. But as right. I understand it, your focus is a little different.
Yeah. My focus is on the inner game. And it's on the mentality.
Like so how to be a more aggressive bulldog?
No. Well, I think that if you conquer your inner game, you could be not necessarily more aggressive, just more powerful in and out of the courtroom. But yeah. It's more about on managing your own personal state. And that comes from my own personal experience as being a trial lawyer for so many years. I eventually came to a place where I was just completely and totally burned out, but had several red flags along the way, including, you know, physical symptoms, thinking I was having a heart attack at the age of 32. And I just became driven to figure out how to do it in a better way. As I think that this, you know, the nature of our business is unique and how adversarial it is, which causes us to have a mask of aggression, to be aggressive, and causes this unique type of stress upon us because we're really in a battle. You know, it's a battle of survival. It's if you're a solo practitioner, a small firm practitioner, it's really about survival. And that's what I was. But it's about also for your clients and, you know, the way that the practice is set up, it's an adversarial system that we're, you know, we're warriors every time we take on a new case.
Yeah, it's interesting that you make that observation because, you know, not every endeavor, not every occupation is in fact set up on an adversarial basis, as you note.
Right.
You know, I can think I relate most things in life to sports, and of course there's an adversarial relationship in sports, but there's also a very physical outlet. And yet in the practice of law, there's an adversarial relationship from the get-go because there are two parties that have a dispute. So by definition, there has to be some aspect of an adversarial relationship, but there's really oftentimes very little release. There's very little way of dealing with the emotions and the stress and the mental effort that it takes to serve your clients in that relationship.
Yes. And it's really, you know, we're seeing years of study of what stress does to the body. And so I really do think of stress as the modern day predator, because the way that the body responds, even to, you know, what we could call low level chronic stress, mm-hmm. is something that, and, you know, in our culture is killing us. It's literally the basis for almost every disease that is out there. And with what we're doing as lawyers, that seems to always be there because you're always in some type of, you know, adversarial nature of trying to win. And I think that we begin when we start in law school, when you talk about how law school doesn't train us to practice law. And I think it actually helps to set us up for failure in some ways when it Yeah. comes to dealing with stress. Because I don't know about you, but for me, law school was very competitive and very stressful. And it's the first time I'd ever taken sleeping pills in my life because my husband begged me to, because I wasn't sleeping and was completely unbearable to live with in that first year. But we're really, our minds are starting to be trained when we start in law school, and trained in a way to be able to practice law effectively, to be able to argue either side. But, you know, that comes with some type of disconnection at the same time. And you start to realize in law school, when you're learning how to argue both sides of a case, that it really is about winning, right? It's about creating a winning argument. And that carries on into the practice, and that we have certain unwritten rules. And those rules begin with, you know, don't allow them to see that you don't know all yeah. that you should know. You know, don't show your weakness. Don't show your ignorance. Don't show them that you're afraid. And we start to operate behind these masks. And I think that that's where we start to really have a disconnect. And that was my experience. And you start to disconnect with who you are, you're losing some of your power. But all of that in itself is a type of stress when you can't really be who you are and having to wear different masks to be able to appear a certain way.
Yeah.
And, you know, for us, you know, the body has a response to stress. It's just like it did, you know, 100 years ago, if we were in a jungle and we were going to be attacked by a tiger. The body has an incredible mechanism that is automatic, that starts to do everything for you to either help you fight or, you know, get the heck out of there, right? Today, we're not hopefully going to take on a physical fight, and we're not hopefully not going to run out of the courtroom. So what you're talking about with there's no way for a release, all of the biological things happen in the body to stress, and we don't really shut down from that. 100 years ago, when the tiger was no longer in our view and no longer a threat, we had the ability to recover. Today, we don't. It's just one thing after another, so that when the phone rings and you see that it's opposing counsel, that is a trigger of a stress release in your body.
when I talk to attorneys, either through this venture, this podcast, or just, you know, just in general, when you ask how you're doing or what's going on, you know, almost universally, the answer that I get back is, well, it's going pretty well, but I'm just so busy. I'm so stressed out. Mm-hmm. It is the number one, just anecdotally, from what I've observed, it's the number one malady that attorneys suffer under. And it manifests itself, as you said, in a lot of ways. A lot of it's physical. Mm-hmm. You know, the incidence of heart attacks and premature death amongst attorneys is staggeringly higher than it is amongst the general population. And the incidence of, you know, alcoholism and drug abuse amongst, yes, our peers is shockingly high. You think, for such smart folks, how can this be the case? But I think, as you said, you've hit the nail on the head. It starts from day one in law school, mm-hmm, and this stress just builds and builds, and it's a tough thing to deal with.
Yeah, and you know, there's the drug and alcohol abuse, and then there's that, the statistics showing that we're four times as depressed as non-lawyers.
Yeah,
and I think that has a lot to do with the disconnect that I was talking about, when the different masks that we have to wear, the amount that we have to juggle, and in this adversarial, I think that leads to a disconnect. One, from your clients. And then it starts to happen from your family and your friends, because we don't really think people can understand what we're dealing with. Most lawyers don't go home and say everything that's going on. Instead, it may just come out as a projection of some type of anger or, you know, frustration, because they don't know what to do with all that energy of stress. But they don't do a lot of talking with their spouses who are non-lawyers about what's really going on. And that causes a disconnect from them. And then that causes a disconnect from ourselves, which is why we're seeing so much depression. And I don't know about you, Neil, but I have, you know, lawyers that I've known personally who've committed suicide. And I know that it came from what they were experiencing or what they felt like was the inability to handle with what was going on in their own practices.
Well, fortunately, I have not had that experience, but I can relate to a point that you brought up about the masks that we wear. I was kind of lucky in a sense that I went to law school late in life. And so I kind of knew who I was, you know, before I went to law school. And coming out of law school, I didn't really have to be somebody I wasn't. And in fact, you know, that's probably why I wasn't as good a litigator as I would have liked to have been, is because I couldn't adopt that persona. But I see some of these young attorneys that sometimes I have to say, are you kidding me? This is the personality you want to project. I know you're not like this at home. I know you're not like this outside of this courtroom or outside of this event or this relationship. Why is it you think you have to be somebody who you aren't? And that has to be stressful.
Yeah. And it's exhausting. It's hard to keep up with that. And you know, you're right. It manifests in different ways. And some of it is self-doubt, and stress comes in and causes that inability to focus. It does cause like social withdrawal, and we get to a point where we don't feel like, you know, we can deal with ourselves. Loss of control, emotional exhaustion, and even becoming cynical, you know, about life just because of the nature of everything. And I hate to hear, you know, when you're talking about young lawyers, I'm beginning to start a program here with our local law school and doing some of this work of what I call mindset work, but starting with teaching some meditation, because I think that we have to be doing it different. I mean, if law is supposed to be about, you know, if you think about it, it really is about managing the relationships of humans. Mm-hmm. That's what laws are. We should be doing it in a way that we're connecting more into humanity and what is the bigger purpose of what we're doing. That's what I believe and how I practice law. But it took me a long time to get to that space. At a great cost to me, mentally and physically, before I started on a path to do something different.
So, I mean, that's a perfect segue to, how do we make a change? How do we address this stress? Because the way I normally hear people talk about their approach is to try and change something about their physical environment, or to change something about their physical interaction with the world. Like, you know, I got to work out more. I got to work out more to relieve this stress. But I'm gathering from what you alluded to there briefly, that yours is an approach that looks from the inside out.
Right. It began for me, I had an experience when I was a student at a program called Trial Lawyers College that was started by Jerry Spence.
Sure.
And I went through that program, in the full program, back in 2002, but I had done some different regional seminars and a program out at the ranch there in Wyoming that was a week-long program. And he spends a lot of time, the message that comes across in all of his work and how he teaches lawyers is all about that if you want to be a better lawyer, then we have to become better people. It all starts within. We have to start to know who we are. And so there's an exercise that everyone that goes to that program at some point gets put through, which is basically getting up before dawn and going in silence. And usually there's 50 lawyers there at a time, and the big meeting space is the top part of a barn. And so for me, it was a cold morning. I remember waking up and everybody's in silent, getting dressed. You can hear this like a dormitory style room downstairs of the big barn. And then we're all walking up the steps to go into the barn upstairs. And so you just hear the stomping of the feet. And when you gather in the room in the circle, for me, it was Jerry that gave the instruction, and he would say warriors, because he calls us warriors, because he believes that the lawyers, you know, they're the, in that program of lawyers that fight for people against corporations and governments, and, you know, either doing plaintiff work or doing criminal defense work. And this experience for me was life-changing. And the instruction was, is to go out upon the land and find a place to be where no one else could see you.
Sure.
And to sit before the sun would rise and to answer two questions, asking yourself, you know, who am I and where am I going? And for me, when I did that and I went out of the barn that morning and looked for a place, and there's a river called the Wind River that runs through the property. So, you know, at that time of the morning, you can hear it so clearly. And I found a place not far from the river and sat down and closed my eyes and basically almost had a vision of myself. And there, part of that vision was, I was like maybe 33, 34 at the time. But I was looking at myself and I was like an 80-year-old or an 85-year-old woman who looked like, to me, she was dying, and asked for, basically felt like a cry for help. And really, I was happy with what I was doing. It was very successful. I loved being in the courtroom, but this was my overwhelm, exhausted burnout point, and realized I was going to have to do something different. And so from going from that experience, I started looking for how is it that we can learn to know who we are. And you say that you went through law school later. And I think this is true. It's for non-lawyers too. You know, at some point we get caught up in a path that maybe we don't even realize why we're doing it anymore. But this stress that we have in our society is a big trigger for that, and that we're just trying to keep up and we've forgotten why we're even doing what we're doing. Yeah. And so for me, the turning point was discovering, and this is the basic thing that I teach every lawyer that comes to me, because I think it's so key, is starting with a meditation practice. Have you ever done anything like that?
Well, interesting. Yes, I have.
Good.
Because I'm very old and a product of the, a child of the 60s and 70s, I was involved in meditation way back when the Maharesh was touring the, United States, and transcendental meditation was a thing, and I loved it. I practiced TM for a long time, and I'm not really sure, to be honest with you, why I stopped or how I stopped, but I did. And it's only recently that I've been concentrating an effort to try and restart a meditation program. And so I want to talk to you about that. You know, how, What is your advice to your clients, to attorneys? Is it jump in full bore, you know, twice a day, 20 minutes, get a teacher, get a coach, use an app, or do you have kind of a methodology that you feel works best?
Yeah. Well, and I find because I work with lawyers mostly that the first thing I have to say is to break the number one myth, which is that meditation means that you're going to sit and not have a thought.
Right.
Because that usually sends most of them, you know, they'll put a hand up and say, I can't even begin to try, right? Because our minds are always going. And our minds have been trained to do that. That's part of what you're trained in law school is to always be thinking the next step, right? And to figure out even the worst case scenario, which is really a terrible way to think that that's the way that we think, but that's part of our job. With meditation, you're not going to stop the thoughts. The job of the mind is to think. So if I can explain that, that would be the first thing, that you're going to have thoughts. The point of meditation is it really is the most ancient practice of training the mind. So when you talk about my method, I believe that, you know, that week, when I say the inner game, it begins with your mind. It begins, if you want to call it mindset, which is the beliefs that we have, which are our own walls and our own rules that we have about ourselves and our ability in the world and how the world works, which may not be actually true. And most of them probably aren't. And it's the place that we meet the most resistance is with our own beliefs. So the point of meditation is just to begin to learn to train the mind to make all of that work for you. But it begins with, you know, mindfulness meditation is the easiest way and is the way that I suggest that people start, which is basically starting to train the mind to focus. We don't realize how unfocused that we are. And because we are so distracted and trying to multitask, which the brain really can't do, the brain can only do things in rapid succession, and trying to multitask just makes us weaker. So we have to sort of teach the mind to start to focus and have complete awareness. And mindfulness meditation is really is the way to do that. And that's what the big hype is. All the research has been done in the last 10 years talks about how mindfulness meditation literally can change the structure of the brain, but it reduces stress and it helps reduce depression, et cetera. There's just so many benefits of mindfulness meditation. And that's just one type of meditation. And it's really as simple as right now, we could just both take a deep breath in and out and be aware that we take a deep breath. And we've done a meditation. I mean, that's a simple example of a mindfulness meditation
even if it's only for seconds at a time.
Even for seconds, it can and you can start to just, even if you did it for 3 minutes of just following your breath, you'll have a huge awareness of what's really going on. Because when you start to follow the breath and you've never done it before, you will be able to follow it probably for about 20 seconds. And then you'll have a thought come in about the fact that you're following your breath and maybe you should be doing something else. But the trick there is to realize, oh, I'm having thoughts even about that. So let me go back to following the breath. And then you'll wander off after another 20 seconds about something that's on your to-do list. And then you'll come back to following the breath. And that begins to train your mind in a few powerful ways. One, you realize how many thoughts that you have, and you can start to pay attention to whether or not thoughts are negative or positive. And then you can be aware that you can choose not to engage with the thought. You can just be aware of the thought being there. And that does crazy things to the mind. Doing a 10-minute practice for a beginner is a really good challenge to start with. And then all the research shows that if you can do 20 minutes a day, then you can get all the significant benefits within a very short period of time, 8 weeks, a consistent practice for 20 minutes. And I suggest that for lawyers that are starting out, or for anyone that's starting out, but particularly lawyers, because of the way that we think we have to be thinking all the time, is to follow a guided meditation practice, something that you can listen to that is going to remind you to go back to focus. And, you know, it may be focusing on the breath. It might be focusing on the breath in a different place. It might be focusing on a particular word or a mantra, or sometimes people like to meditate even with their eyes open. So it's focusing just on a particular object. Right. And I would do that by starting with a guided meditation. And, you know, I'll provide links for you, Neil, that you can share. I have lots of guided meditations that are free. And I have some that I've developed specifically for lawyers to help them with. But that would be my suggestion in starting.
Support for today's episode comes from Ruby, the number one client communication solution for growing legal practices. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Ruby creates exceptional experiences for your callers and website visitors. They take messages, screen and transfer callers, schedule appointments, perform new client intake, confirm details with outbound calls, and can answer in English and Spanish, and a whole lot more. Just like an in-house receptionist, only better, because they turn every ring into a relationship. Ruby can work full-time, part-time, or as a backup, and you can change your instructions anytime with their top-rated mobile app and online dashboard. Plus, Ruby integrates with tools such as Clio, LexiClara, MyCase, and Rocket Matter. It all adds up to more opportunities and more time saved. In fact, 90% of legal professionals who use Ruby capture more billable hours than the national average, with many recording double or more. That's 5 or more billable hours per day. To experience the Ruby difference for yourself, visit get.ruby.com/ELE. That's get.ruby.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, for up to $150 off your first month. Imagine you, powered by Ruby. As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Kimmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top line revenue to bottom line profit. His two game changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to go.oncehub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I've been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com.
I'm a self-confessed techie. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really easy to look at technology today and think we've never had it better in the world. We've never understood ourselves better or understood the psychological and mental needs of humans as much as we do today, because as an example of how we can use technology. But when you think about it, you said something a while back that I want to just kind of flesh out a little bit more. The idea of meditation, the idea of mindfulness in particular, is something that is inherent in every culture around the world throughout history, throughout time. You can go back to Buddhist monks or Taoist monks or Native Indians or yogis in India. It doesn't matter really what culture, what history you look at. There's always been an understanding that training the mind to be clear and focused is important to the development of us as humans.
Yes. And now it's even, you know, the way that we're using it in a modern day society is as it's the drug for stress. I mean, it really is. It's the prescription for stress. Because if you can come into a 10 to 20 minute mindfulness meditation practice where you have, you'll start to see that you'll have longer and longer spaces in between those thoughts. And what happens in those spaces where you're not engaging and you have basically a pause in the mind, on a physical level, it is so rejuvenating and nurturing.
Yeah.
Yes, restorative to the mind and to the body, which is why, you know, science is now catching up to that and actually proving it. It's very, very powerful. And if you want to bring it back to who we're talking here to today and being lawyers, I tell them that if you can start to do this type of focus, what you'll start to realize is one, you'll become more powerful in what you're doing because you won't be so reactive. That's a very powerful effect of doing this type of doing any type of meditation practice, but particularly mindfulness meditation, is that you start to pause before you respond. And we are, I call us being in a reactive mindset. We're always putting out the hottest fire. That's how I always felt in practicing, is like, I just got to put out the next hottest fire, right? I wanted to have a bigger vision and plan, and I did as an entrepreneur, et cetera. But most of the time when I practiced law, it was about putting out the hottest fire because you never knew what was going to hit you next, right? So having this type of being, starting to train the mind this way, you become more powerful because you realize that you have the ability to respond and to take a pause, and you can come from a place of stillness instead of a place of chaos, so that you start to create the way that you want to respond. The other thing is that when you can make your mind focus in and it starts to develop a clear ability to do that, you become more powerful in being creative, which is important for us as lawyers. And we often don't have the energy for that. It takes energy to be creative. And we need to be creative because what we're doing is being creative about how to create strategies for our clients, strategies for the cases that we're handling. So bringing it back to, besides all the physical benefits and that we can see, we know that in our profession, it's so powerful. Lawyers tell me when they start in and they start to become really developing an awareness practice. I work with a lot of trial lawyers because that's my background, but they'll tell me that it's so amazing when I walk into a courtroom now. One, I'm aware of my own anxiety and I have ways of releasing that, because you can, once you become aware that the anxiety is there, there are ways to shift that. But two, I become more aware of the energy that's in the space in this courtroom. I'm aware of what's really being said by the opposing counsel, meaning the words that are not being said. I'm aware of what's going on with the judge, or I'm aware of what's going on with the jury. So the ramifications or the benefits of doing this type of practice are huge.
Yeah, I'll just amplify that with an anecdotal story. A long time, as many of the listeners know, long time practicing and teaching martial artists. Mm-hmm. One of the things that is inherent in the martial arts is that if you're going to participate in the actual combat elements of the martial arts, the practitioner with the quietest mind, the one who can think mm-hmm. in the midst of the physical confrontation that's going on, is the one that most often is going to prevail. And,
yes.
And I think that correlation carries over, particularly to litigators, people who are in the courtroom, but also to others, that
right.
if you can capture that Zen-like, to use that particular example, that Zen-like, what in the Japanese we call mushin, mind of mm-hmm. no mind, if you
yes.
can cultivate that, it's going to help your practice. So
yes.
even if you're like, well, I don't really care about, you know, reducing stress, or I'm physically, I'm fine, I'm okay with that, but how can this help me, you know, in my practice? Well, there's a perfect example. My martial arts teacher was also an attorney, and he would say that he won cases many times just because he was able to quiet his mind and be
yes.
able to take in, as you said, all that is going on around him and still function.
Yes, that is a beautiful correlation. I love that story.
Yeah. So this something that's been really fascinating to me, you know, just another quick aside, we hear in the podcast universe, a lot of podcasts are folks dealing with a morning ritual, a morning routine as being a way of kind of organizing their life and organizing their approach to all that goes on around them. And I haven't seen one yet that did not include some element of meditation in their right. morning ritual.
Yes.
Do you advocate kind of the morning kind of thing or an evening
well,
everything or all mm-hmm. you know, multiple times during the day or what's kind of your view on
well,
that?
Well, and I think it depends on what your energy levels are. I do think some people are night people and some people are morning people. I'm a morning gal. I'm up at 4:30. I'm also fading at 9 o'clock. So if I try to do a meditation at 9 o'clock at night, I'm going to be asleep within a minute, you know? So I think it's one being aware of when you have more energy, but I so believe in some type of morning practice, even if you are a night person, of doing a morning practice where you tap into what you're talking about, like that Zen-like state, but also tapping into, when I think of a bigger picture of mindset, of clearly being aware of what is coming in your day and what your energy is around it. Like, you know, for most of us, for a long time, I lived in a space of the alarm go off and I would immediately have some anxiety, right? Because I just think about everything that I have to do and what was before me. And like it begins before my feet even hit the floor. So having a morning practice where you can realize that and start to let go of that and setting, I believe, intentions of what's going to happen in the day is a way of being, again, in a creative mindset as opposed to a reactive mindset.
And as somebody once pointed out to me, you're not always in control
right.
of your day as it progresses, but you're always right. in control of your morning as it starts.
Yes. Very, very good thought.
So.
And I do think in some of the ways that the way that we start our morning is the way that we tap into how we're going to be in the day. And that, you know, that's true. The mind has a confirmation bias. So in the morning, if you are in a positive, what I would call mindset, and start that way, you're going to perceive what happens to you throughout the day in a different way because the mind is going to continue to try to confirm it that way. But if you begin the morning stressed out, anxiety, fearful, then that's generally going to be your experience throughout the day. And I've sort of done my own testing on that and working with different people and seeing people who are generally like very negative mindset and training them to try to change that and shift it in the morning of what an eye opener that is for them of how it starts to change how they're just perceiving what's happening through the day.
Well, I think we've all had that experience throughout our lives. At times you wake up in the morning, there are times when for whatever reason you wake up happy. I don't know, you hear a good song on the radio or
right.
a good aroma in the house or what have you. You wake up happy and you're pretty much happy, you know, until something else happens to make you not so happy. And the converse is true. If you wake up stressed or upset with the world or, you know, you hit the snooze alarm and then you slept through it, now you're rushing around, it's going to take you a while and perhaps the entire day to let loose of that.
Right.
So I think you're right. How you experience the start of the day is oftentimes how you experience the rest of it.
Right. So meditation practices in the morning and other kind of mindset practices that you start to take control of that are very powerful.
Do you include journaling in your process?
I do.
Yeah.
That's
just something I have not been able to get on board with.
Yeah. I've just normally, the way that I process myself is by writing, and I have people who are really challenged by it. So what I do with someone who may feel resistant to it is like specifically, if you'd like for a morning practice, would be specifically just answering certain questions.
Yeah.
Like even being like when we talk about productivity, And focus, another way of increasing that is like being really clear about what is the most important thing for you to be focused on today. It might be one of the examples of a question that I would have in a journal practice in the morning, so that you have that set in your mind, so it affects what you say yes and no to.
Well, listen, Lexley, I just think what you're doing is brilliant. I think it's so needed in the legal community. I'm just overjoyed that I had the opportunity to chat with you today. Tell our audience how they might go about reaching out to you if they want to kind of follow up, or if something that we've suggested or said resonates with them and they want to be a part of it.
Oh, at first, thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed being here, and I could talk about this all day long. So thank you for having me on to be able to share. And the name of my program and the name of my website is Mind Over Law. So mindoverlaw.com. And on there, under resources, there is a 7-day beginner meditation challenge that you can individuals can sign up for. It's really simple, and it has all of those, what I talked about, different recordings so that you can listen, and giving different breathing techniques and that kind of thing. And then there's a contact if they want to reach out and find out more.
Awesome. Well, it's a cool website as well. It's got, I spent probably, I don't know, a couple of hours the other day just reading back through all your blog posts.
Oh, wow.
Which is, terrifically enlightening and empowering. So I would recommend to our listeners that once you get on that website, don't overlook the blog page, because there is article after article after article that really have, in my opinion, a lot of value for all of us.
Thank you.
So again, Lexley, thanks ever so much for being a guest here today on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them. And I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.